today on CityCast Denver. Was there really a bar and quote-unquote prostitution tents at an unhoused encampment downtown? And could the increase in public overdoses mean we're overdue for another legislative fight over supervised drug use sites? It's Tuesday, so me and producer Paul Caroli are talking about all the local stories that matter, plus answering your questions and comments. Today is Tuesday, September 19th. I'm Bree Davies, and here's what Denver's talking about.
Well, we're glad you're feeling better.
I am. I sound terrible, but I am totally here, sort of. I'm not on steroids anymore from my doctor, so I'm not like I was Friday. Sorry. Apologies to you guys for how insane I was.
It was a weird day.
I know. I'm sorry. I was like so high on cold meds, but I wanted to help. I missed you guys so much. I was like, I can't write a sentence. How do you spell East Coast? And Peyton was like, sure, write this, whatever. So I'm back.
Well, welcome back, Bree.
Hi, Paul.
Hey.
I'm back.
Yeah. You missed a big announcement we made on the show on Friday.
I've never experienced FOMO, I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
That term has never resonated with me until this.
Mm.
And then I had FOMO because I didn't get to be with my team when we announced this amazing, incredible component to our show now, which is you can become a member. We need founding members of CityCast Denver to help us keep going. Like, we know the state of journalism and we want to continue to do it. And you can be a part of that right now. So if you join as a founding member of CityCast Denver, you get perks, ad-free listening, and some exclusive members-only things that we'll be rolling out here soon, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, me too. We've got so many ideas. Too many ideas,
I know,
probably.
I was going to say, I was stewing all week with all these ideas of things I wanted to bring to our listeners and engage with us more. And we get to hear from you. And we really want to make this a community because I think so many of you reach out to us and respond to our show in such an amazing, organic way already. This is a cool thing where you can be part of that on a level that keeps us going.
Yeah.
So if you go to membership.citycast.fm, you can become one of our very first members today.
Yeah, and you'll get that ad-free podcast feed that you mentioned, which is, that's huge. Think about all the time of your life that you get
fast
back.
Fast-forwarding.
which, you know, nice. Let us know what you want. Because, yeah, we're still percolating on this membership thing. So if there's something that you want that would tip you over into signing up,
yeah,
let us know. We'll think about it. We'll talk about it.
Because we have so many ideas, but we do really want to hear what you would like out of this show and from us, because we would like to deliver that to you.
So all you got to do is just visit membership.citycast.fm to become one of our very first members today.
Hee-hee.
But Bree,
yeah,
the news. What are Denverites talking about?
Also, again, I missed a lot of fun news last week.
Oh,
we're not talking about Boebert. You guys already talked about Boebert.
We'll talk about her a little later, actually.
Okay. But I think one of the biggest stories that I know we all came across was this, quote, homeless bar.
Mm-hmm.
It was a headline I kept seeing. Homeless,
it's a very
bar.
Grabby phrase. What
100%.
Does that mean? Homeless bar.
Yeah.
Homeless bar.
Well, we know homelessness is a huge issue here in Denver, and there are many ways to present that word in different contexts. And this one was very, very sensational to me. What happened, Paul?
Yeah. So here's what happened is this was first reported by CBS Colorado early last week. But the story was quickly picked up by national, more sensational outlets. The Daily Mail had a piece on this. I first saw it in a New York Post story with the headline, Denver Homeless Camp Features Pop-Up Bar with Rentable Prostitution Tents.
Oh, no.
Which is another, there's two main parts to this.
It's
the bar.
Daily Mail and the New York Post.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And it has yet to be picked up by the Denver Post, by the Colorado Sun, by Denverite. No one's really like dug into this. It was just the CBS Colorado report, which mostly quoted police officers and one person from an organization that like purports to be an advocate for the unhoused community.
Yeah.
But anyway, if you haven't seen these reports, it's really quite striking. I mean, there's pictures of shelves of liquor bottles, couches, big umbrellas, tents around the periphery. I drove past actually this morning. It's at 23rd and Champa, or at least that's what CBS Colorado said it was. I drove around the area. I couldn't find any of these shelves or bottles. I did see a few couches and like chairs, but they were dispersed around different camps in the area. This whole neighborhood is really a hot spot for the unhoused community. And there was a sweep there a few weeks ago, but I think people are just moving around.
Well, and I just want to remind folks, this is where services are. This is the area of town where the most services are concentrated for unhoused folks. We've got the Rescue Mission. We've got Catholic Charities there. A lot of these things existed long before this was a desirable part of town, again, in one of the ebbs and flows of Denver. So, but something else I want to pull back on, Paul, or like step back mm-hmm. to a little bit, was you were talking about who reported this. Mm-hmm. CBS Colorado was the first place we saw this. This is the same broadcast news outlet that brought us the homeless mayor, the Aurora mayor's Mike Kaufman cosplays as a homeless person.
Right. Yes. A few years ago. I remember that.
So I think it's more clear to us as journalists who look at the news every day, there's different perspectives coming from different types of news outlets. And I was just not surprised that CBS was the one to pick this up, where, as you said, some other outlets like Denverite didn't, right?
No, not yet, at least. I mean, perhaps people are looking into it more, but it's kind of an odd story because, like, you can see in the pictures what was happening. I mean, we don't know for sure. Like, no one has gone in and said, yes, I made a transaction. I paid for a shot of Crown Royal on the street at this bar and sat on this couch. I haven't seen that quote or heard that person talk, but I can see the pictures. It sure looks like what they're saying it is.
Yeah. And, you know, okay, man, I had so many thoughts about this. I guess I would say, first of all, it is not a nice sight or thought for sure to think about this like open bar situation.
Yeah.
Again, I'm a person in recovery for 17 years. The way that we treat alcohol in our society is weird. And it's so much about the context. So I see plenty of people tailgating. I see plenty of people throwing house parties. I see plenty of people partying in the park. We've all drank at concerts out of our purse, out of flasks. So I just like, I feel there's a little bit of sensational stuff happening around this because it involves unhoused people.
Yeah.
And that part was, it just felt like a little bit of a setup to me. Well,
I saw a lot of people responding in that way, but then I guess I had my own reaction, which was like, bars are licensed for a reason.
For sure.
Like, there are laws regulating bars for a reason.
Absolutely.
I understand why you might think like, well, what's the problem with people having some alcohol in the place where they live? That's what I do. But think about like serving minors. Think about like not over serving people. Like when the mayor talks about like health and safety reasons for justifying a sweep, I think this is what he's talking about, this kind of thing.
And I agree. I agree with you too. I think that there is a lot of regulation around bars for that very reason, for safety. But I also am thinking about camping out for Sneagrab, camping out for Stranahan's whiskey, and how we had that conversation come up a couple of years ago when people are like, wait, so you can camp out for commerce, mm-hmm. but you can't camp out to live. And I'm not equating these as the same thing. All I'm saying is context matters. And sometimes we think differently about things that involve people that we see of a lesser status in society. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let's take that analysis and apply it to the other piece of the story, which is the prostitution tents, the reported prostitution tents. Again,
sex work happens everywhere, whether you want it to or not. I don't know. That's a really tough one for me too, because we regulate sex work in really strange ways that tends to often harm sex workers more than it actually, quote, fixes whatever the societal problem is. I found that part to just be total BS.
You think?
Kinda.
Yeah.
It's happening everywhere. I know sex workers. I know people that have been involved in sex work. It literally is happening right now everywhere. I just don't understand what that has to do with, I don't know. Also, can we just talk about when we talk about the Old West in this city, and we talk about the sort of vision of the Old West that we have, like brothels or these like magical, funny, weird place. You know, they're like places
certainly depicted that way sometimes.
Repute, but like they kind of have a tinge of fun to them.
Okay.
And then like, but then we're like coming. I don't know. There's just so many contradictions happening here to me around what's illegal, what's not, how it's happening, who's doing it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I do want to point out that I feel for business owners too. I know the owners of OneFold were like, our umbrellas were stolen off of our patio and put here. That sucks. Yeah. Don't steal. That sucks. I'm with the owners on that part for sure.
Yeah. That was like a kind of an interesting ironic twist of this whole thing. And this was in Westward. They talked to the co-owner of OneFold, Mark Neary, about this. And it turns out that at the same time, his umbrellas had been stolen for this homeless, quote unquote, homeless bar. He has been waiting for an alcohol license from the city for months, I guess.
Yeah.
And then there were some quotes from the excise and license department that made it sound like maybe he's been dragging his feet a little bit. But anyway, he says, as for the stolen umbrellas, quote, we had some spares in the basement that we pulled out. I thought about grabbing them for a minute, but they had holes and were all dirty.
Yeah, that sucks.
Like, yeah.
Those umbrellas are expensive. We know how expensive it is to run a restaurant these days in, you know, like we talk to people about this. It's an expensive business. The margins suck. So that was the only part of the story to me that really like made me feel for something was like, these business owners are just trying to run a business.
Yeah. So. Let's move on. Cause this other thing we want to talk about today has interesting thematic connections here about context and what people do and, and who shoulders the burden, perhaps?
For sure.
So there was a story in the Denver Post about overdose deaths being on the rise here in Denver. Bree, what specifically are we talking about here?
It was really a focus on public overdoses. So overdoses happening in public spaces versus like a private home or like a party or however you see an overdose happen in a movie. That's not really what's happening here.
On the dance floor, John Travolta then saves you and you continue your date, I think.
Or you're in the worst toilet in Scotland in Trainspotting.
Right, yeah.
No, but this was about folks coming across people overdosing, whether you're like at work, you're a grocery store worker, you walk into the bathroom and someone is overdosed. You're a barista. Mm-hmm. You're a cashier at a 7-Eleven, you're just walking down the street or driving your car and you see somebody overdosing. And that's really been on the rise, is bystanders becoming first responders in a much more heightened way. There's more people having to figure out what to do.
To be put in that position.
Yeah. And so the number of people who died of overdoses in Denver public spaces has more than tripled between 2018 and 2022. So that's a lot. That's a lot. 87 people overdosed and died in public spaces last year alone. And 72 people have died in public in the first 6 months of this year. So it is, the numbers are there. This is real. People are really experiencing this. And this story was really just about, what do people do? Whose job is it? And how are we responding as a society, as healthcare professionals, and as legislators?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. It is hard. The piece I want to ask you about is this trauma piece, because the article talked to some folks about the trauma that a bystander might feel from witnessing someone having an overdose or heaven forbid, dying of an overdose in public. Is that an experience you've ever had? Have you ever encountered someone having an overdose in public?
I have not. I watched someone die in front of me, but it was not from an overdose. And I will tell you, I was a child and it has never left my brain. I was 3 years old and I remember it. It's the only memory I have from youth. And so I can imagine if you are somebody who's seen this in a really, really traumatic way or multiple times, it never leaves you. And there's a lot of studies about how trauma impacts our psyches and our lives for the rest of our lives. So it's hard. And it's also this positions folks are being put in is like the trauma of not doing anything, the trauma of seeing it happen, or the trauma of trying to do something and someone dying anyway. The trauma of you
not
trying
doing something right, maybe making a mistake, maybe.
Or them being carted off, you know, the EMTs show up and then you don't know what happened to them. And so I think that's the psychological part that we're really dealing with is, I don't know, other than we've got a lot of people walking around with a lot of trauma.
Yeah. And more apparently every year, because this trend is going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
There's one interesting situation here. You brought up the grocery store workers. I want to ask you about this situation facing the union. So this is the UFCW Local 7, because apparently King Soopers bathrooms are a convenient place to do drugs for some people.
Sure.
If you've ever been to the King Soopers on Spear, you know that they've installed some lights and they've installed some like safety measures to keep people safe, I guess, or to maybe disincentivize people from doing it a little bit.
I would need to hear from the experts on this, but I from what I gathered is like the lights are blue in there, so you can't see veins for shooting up.
Okay. Well,
but it puts it okay. in the context of yeah. this. This is a public space.
Yeah. So the union, the head of the union, Kim Cordova, says they're considering asking the company to train employees and supply folks with naloxone
yeah.
as part of their regular work as, you know, grocery store clerks and boxers and stuff. Quoting from the article, on the other hand, Cordova said, union officials aren't sure they want their workers to have that responsibility.
Totally.
For one, they aren't paramedics. She also expressed concern about the mental health impact of trying and failing to save someone's life. Or what if the overdose victim reacts violently?
Yeah, I want to talk about the reaction in a minute, but I understand this perspective as well. We ask people in positions of customer service, on front customer facing positions, to do all kinds of things all the time that A, they're not qualified to do, and B, they're not paid enough to do, and they don't have enough training or support to do those things. Because if you see, there's a story in this story, there's a gentleman who saw someone overdose in a restroom at work at a grocery store. And ever since then, he can't go back in the bathroom. And then he just doesn't go to the bathroom until he goes home. It's causing a health issue for him because it's so traumatic.
Yeah.
And so I see where the union is coming from and is like, why do we have to train our people to be on the front lines of something that we need to deal with as a society? And I can see the balance of like tipping the scale. So do we train people? In theory, yes, because you want more people to be able to help others. But in reality, this is just a bigger push to me for safe injection sites or safe use sites so that there is a place for folks to do drugs to take the burden off of the people that potentially are on the front lines of this. I kind of agree with the union. I don't know if this is the best way to go.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want that response. I worked in retail for 17 years, neither. Paul. I had to clean bathrooms. I had to come across people having insulin shock in a restroom or something. I wouldn't want to have to do that as a 17-year-old cart, you know, the guy that gathers the carts at the grocery store. I don't want him to go in the bathroom and deal with this and then be like, oh, I'm trained to do it, but I don't know if I'm doing it right. So I see where the struggle is. But the violent reaction I wanted to talk mm-hmm. to you about really quick. I was talking to my sister yesterday, who's a paramedic, and I was asking her about coming across overdoses and is this something you deal with every day? She's like, absolutely every day. But the difference is she has gone and trained and hung out at the Harm Reduction Action Center to learn a little bit more about overdoses from that perspective. And she said, a lot of times when I get called to an overdose, I start talking to the person even though they're unconscious before they're conscious to let them know that they're okay. So that when they come into the situation, it's more calm. And she's like, I see some other folks in my industry like freaking out and screaming and it's like heightening the situation. And so she's like, I've really made an effort to approach the situation in a calm way with the person as they come out of it. And 9 times out of 10, they're not violent. So just something to think about is like, it's again, not your job.
That is good to know though. 9 times out of 10 is about what
yeah,
you would say.
Yeah, she was like, it's very rare that someone is violent or we need to restrain them in this situation, in an overdose situation. I'm not talking about other situations. So just something to think about is like, don't let that be the reason that you don't try to help somebody if you feel comfortable or confident in helping them.
I want to ask you about the supervised use sites a bit more. You brought those up a minute ago. That was a big part of this article. The Denver Post reports that some state lawmakers are talking about making another push to do this, to authorize these places where people could go and use drugs.
Yeah.
I guess safely or in a protected way.
A safe use site is a space where they don't provide drugs. They don't sell drugs. This is not a open air drug market or anything. If you have drugs to do, you can go to this space. It's clean and it's supervised. So if you shoot up or however you take your drugs and you overdose, there's a medical professional on site that takes care of it, that helps you.
To do the job we would be otherwise asking our grocery store clerks to do.
So it's getting people out of the street because they're going to be doing it anyway. And I think that's the reality that's really hard to legislate around.
Well, I want to hear your take on the chances of this. Because Denver already approved this a few years ago, so it really is just up to the state. The Denver Post reports that one lawmaker who was previously against it seems to be changing their mind. Do you think this has any chance of being passed?
I think as more and more people die, yeah. As more and more people are, it's one of those issues where it almost feels like you have to be personally impacted to fully understand it. which I think a harm reduction advocate would tell you, I don't want you to have to lose somebody to care. But I think that's where we're getting, where in the next couple of years, we will continue, because fentanyl is in the drug supply. It is killing people so quickly. It's going to force more people to care, or at least empathize and understand. And I do think in a couple of years, we'll be at a place where maybe this is when we talk about this with Colorado all the time, right, Paul? We're this forefront for drugs, for legalization, for how we handle them, for how we sell them, for how we supply them. This might be, we might be the harm reduction leaders in this, in the country, which I think would be incredible. But I do think it'll take a couple years.
Could be. Could be. We'll see. Yeah. We'll be following that one. But right now, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with questions and comments from you, our listeners.
Yay.
All right, and we're back. And here we are at the end of our Tuesday show. We always want to hear from you, and this is the time where we get to respond to you, our brilliant and hilarious listeners, about the things you care about. So today I've got a voicemail that came through on the CityCast Denver hotline. Bree, I'm going to play it for you. Hear your take.
Okay.
Hi, my name's Victoria. I live on the west side. I'm just in the middle of listening to Paul Corley speak with Patty Calhoun. Anytime y'all can get Patty Calhoun on, it's perfect. It's wonderful. She is the best. She's actually a gem, and Denver is so lucky to have her, and it's so nice to hear her on your show. That's all. Love, Patty Calhoun. Thanks.
Oh my gosh. Victoria, thank you for saying that. I think a lot of folks don't know the institution that Patty is as a person in terms of every... We're in Westward's offices right now, Paul, and we can walk around the corner and ask Patty the most benign question about something that happened in 1987 in Denver, and she probably knows or was there or knows somebody who was in the room.
And have a great story and about it to tell you about. Yeah.
Great storyteller. I learned how to write headlines from this woman. I learned how to to talk about my city through reading. I've been reading Patty's Off Limits column since I was 11 years old. And it's really cool to hear from our listeners that they also enjoy her wild and really interesting Denver stories.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, she's a great resource. She's a role model. She's a mentor.
She's a powerhouse. She's been running this paper since 1977. Every day,
it's incredible.
This woman is in here.
It's incredible. And also, she makes this show better. I mean, this is something that happened behind the scenes last week, but after we talked about the Michelin stars being doled out, I got a nice email from Patty. I had made this criticism. I said, the local media is not covering this, the fact that the State Tourism Board paid for Michelin to come here. And Patty politely said, no, we've actually had this quite a few times in the Westward. So, but you know, next time,
it's
next
the
time,
paper
check us out
of record.
First. Don't miss it.
Anytime I'm Googling something for a history in our show, it's generally a Westward article pops up. So
it is
not
it
surprised.
Is,
that's cool.
It is special what she has done.
Great.
All right. Next listener comment comes to us from Jessica Z. Longtime listener here, I wanted to provide a little feedback on something I heard on today's show regarding Boebert's ejection from DCPA this week. So this is in response to our Friday episode with Justine Sandoval and Tim Hernandez, where we talked about Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert, her big night out at the theater, getting kicked out of Beetlejuice. Do you want to speak to that? You haven't had a chance to sound off on that, Bree. Do you have a thought to share?
I mean, I saw the surveillance tape. I was just like, oh, you're that person next to me at the concert. That sucks. I hate you. It bothered me that she was vaping and there was a pregnant woman behind her as a person who's been pregnant recently. Anyway, I think you and Justine and Tim did this conversation. I couldn't have thought of the more perfect voices I wanted to hear you talk with about this.
I agree. I thought it was a great episode. If you haven't heard it, go back and check it out. There is one moment Jessica Z takes issue with. She writes, Representative-elect Tim Hernandez was discussing Boebert's anti-trans, anti-drag statements and the irony / hypocrisy of the person she was with hosting a drag night at his bar. I don't believe that Paul meant for his response to sound like this, but he said, quote, I want to push back on that. I don't think we should hold her to a purity test for her trans hate. What? Jessica says, I don't know what a purity test for trans hate is. Her anti-trans, anti-drag rhetoric, i.e. her hate, has led to real and material consequences for trans, queer, and GNC folks in Colorado and throughout the U.S. Hanging out with people with different political views, we have no idea what her date actually believes politically. What we know is his bar hosted a drag night does not reduce the harm that she is doing to our most vulnerable folks.
Hi, Jess.
Yeah, thank you so much for that feedback, Jessica. That was an interesting moment. I have thought about that actually ever since.
Yeah, and I think it's really important because this is where the conversation comes down to. I know that Jess works closely with and has family members within this community. And I think when you know the impacts of legislation and people like Boebert who talk about the trans community the way she does, it incites such fear in other folks. And like Jess says, she's this power. You know what I mean? She's a legislator. And so I'm with her in that I don't think you meant it that way. I think it was more of a thought about like, well, we don't really know what's going on, but who knows who this guy is, whatever's going on. And like, is this the, I guess maybe were you saying like, is this the conversation we should be having about Boebert right now? Or
yeah, I guess so. I guess what I was trying to say is like hypocrisy from Boebert is like best case scenario.
Yeah.
I would love for her to be more hypocritical and to go back on positions she's taken in the past. So many of the things she's said and done are so despicable. Like hypocrisy would be a great outcome at this point.
And in a dream world, she would just like go to this bar and experience it and enjoy it and like not be a total
right?
psychotic freak about it. But also, I would not want to subject people in this community yeah. to being in a room with someone that they know is actively legislated against their bodies. But I appreciate that. And I really like when we're able to hear from our listeners who have direct experience in the community.
Yeah, I think that is a more nuanced conversation. I appreciate the feedback. More to think about. Please keep these comments and questions coming. This
For
is
sure.
this is such a great part of my week is being prompted to think about something in a new way. So if you have thoughts or feedback on anything you've heard on the show, we would love to hear from you. You can text or leave us a voicemail at the CityCast Denver hotline. That number is 720-500-5418. Once again, the CityCast Denver hotline is 720-500-5418.
Cool.
Yeah, so if you got thoughts on the quote-unquote homeless bar, the drug overdoses going up, if you have encountered someone overdosing in public, I want to hear that story. Please call in and leave us that story.
Or if you've been one of those people or you survived that, I'd really love to hear from folks that are willing to share their experience on the other end of things as well.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, shout out Harm Reduction Action Center always. Thank you.
Well, Bree, so great to have you back.
Thanks, Paul. I'm so glad to be back. That's all for today here on CityCast Denver. If you enjoyed this show, why not take a minute to tell OneFold co-owner Mark Neary about us? Rate the show wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to our morning newsletter, Hey Denver, and learn more about us at denver.citycast.fm. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. See you later. Tell the vaping. Tell your favorite vaping legislator about us.